Who do poets write for? Are poets writing to real readers with flesh and blood, or to some abstract notion of a reader, a godlike being with an infinite attention span and perfect skin who breathes in poetry like air? This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast, August 2nd, 2006. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Intimate Thoughts for Total Strangers. A couple of years ago, there was a poem in Poetry Magazine that I couldn't make sense of. You know, it's one of those difficult poems that you scan and then you do a quick cost-benefit analysis to figure out whether it's worth the trouble to reread and puzzle out. Then, more often than not, you just move on to the next one. After all, there is always a next poem. So why sweat the difficult ones, right? Yet it's annoying when you don't get what a poem's up to. I find myself resenting a poet who wrote something that I, a reasonably intelligent, if lazy, reader, do not comprehend. The poem I'm thinking of is called Dear Reader. It's by Dean Young, who teaches at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And rather than say anything more about Dean Young or his poem, let's just give it a listen. Maybe it'll make some sense this time. The reader is Barbara Rosenblatt.
Dear reader, my nightmares are your confetti, so you may step over tiny skulls like a satrap among unhousebroken whippets. The sour diapers of morning give way to the overripe plums of noon, give way to the designer cheeses of evening. Then night is no one's problem. How tender it is with its murderers, how consoling to its trillionaires, that lost spaceman music in the pines, God opening his box of fish hooks. Dear reader, I thought I was prepared, but I'm never prepared. But please, take this. It is your lift ticket, your perfume that lingers in the fire-fickled room long after you've vamoosed and made that poor boy nursing his third jelly bean daiquiri realize he missed his chance. Your bones already asterisks, your chipmunk glance a schwa.
Barbara Rosenblatt reading Dear Reader by Dean Young. You know, I still don't get what sort of feeling or idea the poet is trying to bring out, much less if he has succeeded or not. I guess it's time to call the poet.
Hello.
Hi, this is Curtis Fox from the Poetry Foundation. Is this Dean?
Yeah.
Dean, so we've been just listening to your poem, Dear Reader.
Uh-huh.
And I got to say, it made me laugh, but I don't know why. And I have no idea what exactly is going on in this poem and what the intention is. And I was hoping you could fill us in a little bit. If you remember, it's probably been a while since you wrote it, right?
Yeah, it's been pretty much exactly a year.
Uh-huh.
Or no, 2 years.
That's not that long.
I have no idea what my intention was beyond just trying to write a poem. James Tate has a poem called Dear Reader, which I think begins, I'm trying to pry open your coffin with a snowflake, something like that. And I just wanted to write a poem that examined or explored the strange relationship between the writer and the reader.
And why is that relationship strange to you?
I mean, to sit down and write a poem and to conceive of a reader seems to me to be highly laughable.
Why is it laughable?
Well, because writing a poem is a very private act. It's not a conversation. It's more like sort of leaving some strange object on a trail that you never know if anybody's going to go down that trail or not.
If you don't mind just going over the first part of the poem again... Could you read this, the very top stanza?
Sure. It's sort of like a letter. So the salutation is, Dear Reader, my nightmares are your confetti, so you may step over tiny skulls like a satrap among unhousebroken whippets.
So what's going on there?
Well, it's mostly, I'm saying, I think that my imaginative acts something that you can play with or use mm-hmm. to distract you from your own strange little life.
Uh-huh. So like a satrap, a powerful Middle Eastern king, basically.
Yeah, it's a metaphor, of course.
Yeah. And then the next stanza?
What is going on in the next stanza? The sour diapers of morning give way to the overripe plums of noon, give way to the designer cheeses of evening. This is just basically like time passes.
Uh-huh.
We grow old.
Uh-huh.
We start out with diapers. We have a adolescent midlife blush.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then towards evening, we just sit around with our little connoisseurships.
Yeah, I should have caught that. I don't know why. That's obvious.
Yeah, what's the deal, Curtis?
Yeah, it's so obvious now that you say it. and then what happens? And then the next thing.
Well, then it's we're off the hook, uh-huh. kind of.
Yeah, the night is no one's problem. I get that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that maybe death is that what you're in?
Probably.
Probably. We don't want to over.
Well, that's always, you know, I have a tendency to sort of point towards death an awful lot in my work.
Uh-huh.
My work is probably quite morbid. If it is funny, I think that's one of the places the humor comes from.
Then night is no one's problem. How tender it is with its murderers. How consoling to its trillionaires. That lost spaceman music in the pines. God opening his box of fish hooks.
And in the middle of the poem, you go back to the salutation. You go back to Dear Reader.
Right.
Read that stanza, if you would.
Dear reader, I thought I was prepared, but I'm never prepared. But please take this.
In other words, take this poem.
Yeah.
And read on, if you would.
It is your lift ticket, your perfume that lingers in the fire-fickled room long after you've vamoosed.
And keep going.
And made that poor boy nursing his third cinnamon daiquiri realize he missed his chance. Your bones already asterisks, your chipmunk glance a schwa.
Uh-huh. So you're imagining somebody in a bar reading this poem? Is that what's going on?
There's a third person in here,
mm-hmm.
the poor boy.
Okay.
And the poor boy, I think, is a parallel to the speaker of the poem. Because this part is concerned with a kind of meeting, you know, the meeting between the reader and the writer. And it doesn't happen, you know.
Mm.
The reader is somebody who's gone. The presence of the reader in, you know, as I try to conjure up a reader of my poem, the moment I sort of see them is also the moment they're gone. Now that I think about it, of course, there's a mythic echo there of Orpheus and Eurydice.
Mm-hmm. Because what? Explain that.
Well, because, you know, I mean, she's the ultimate reader.
Uh-huh.
There's these messages that go back and forth between Orpheus and Eurydice, carried by Hermes, and that's the origin of our phrase hermetic. And as soon as you turn around and try to see the reader disappears.
Mm-hmm. So you imagine your reader is totally invisible, but you must occasionally do readings of poetry, right? When you have an audience right in front of you.
Yeah.
And then there they are, sitting, staring right at you. But and you say is that odd for you then?
Well, they're not necessarily readers. They're sitting there and somebody's, you know, talking. They're listeners.
Yeah.
It's a different deal, you know. I'm much more concerned with poems on the page. I don't even particularly like poetry readings.
Why not?
Well, because I think anything that pushes poetry towards the performative is, to my taste, a mistake.
Really? So you don't like when actors read your stuff? Or?
I've never heard an actor read anything I've written, and nor do I relish the occasion.
Well, you're going to hear one on this podcast. And any mistake that she makes in the reading is totally my fault, because I was the one who directed her. So we actually were completely flummoxed by this poem. We didn't know how to attack it. And that's when the reasons I'm calling you right now. So if people want to read more of your poetry, where are they going to find it?
In bookstores.
But what book would you recommend that people get started with?
I'm always trying to sell the most recent book because it makes my publisher happy. So the most recent book is Elegy on Toy Piano, published by University of Pittsburgh Press, and I have a book coming out in November that Dear Reader is in called Embry-Yo-Yo,
uh-huh.
and that'll be published by Believer Books.
Dean Young, thanks very much.
It was a pleasure, Curtis.
You can also find three poems by Dean Young in the special humor issue of Poetry Magazine that's out this summer. The Sneeze Ode, Sean Penn Anti-Ode, and last but not least, Poem on a Theme by Tony Hoagland, which begins very ambitiously with the line, I have a big erection. More of Dean Young's poems are on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you'll also find poetry news and features. Please do take a moment to let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For the poetryfoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.